Good morning. While we're waiting to have things load up here, I'm Jerry Gioia. I'm here at Children's National Medical Center, and I'm going to talk about some of the medical aspects of this injury. Just as disclosure here, I'm actually picking up here for Julie, so I do have some things to report, and I actually don't share them with her, so that's not actually very neighborly, but I'm a test author. One of the things I do is I fill holes and try to build tools along the way, some of which result in some financial benefit. Today's objective is here to talk about the mechanisms of this injury and the kinds of consequences that result from these injuries, and also to talk about some of the evidence-based treatments. That will actually be the shorter part of my talk because we have a lot we still need to do, but I'll give at least some ideas about where we're going. I like to feature Alan here. This is a picture that goes with his story now. 4 years ago, that in many ways really kicked off this issue for high school students. And as I think Alan's heard me say before, I remember reading this going, oh, it's not just a football problem. Well, Alan had that in hand because a week later, he actually did a story here on girls' soccer. And I think that's really important because as we look at this from a public health perspective, we need to understand, you know, the total risk. And it's not just a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, Monday night problem here. I think it's important to also recognize that we use different terms here. Everybody prefers the C word, concussion, but in fact it is a traumatic brain injury. Nobody likes to hear that, but that's what it is. The other thing that I literally pound into kids' heads, actually let's say figuratively, is that your brain is your future. And the reason why we're taking this so seriously is because that future actually is partly responsible for your parents' retirement. So I don't screw that up. But that brain is important to protect. When we look at actually what happens with this injury, of course, being from the state of Maryland, girls lacrosse is well represented. So I have a picture of a girls lacrosse player here. A blow is taken to the head, and here typically it's the stick. What we know is that in the vast minority of cases, we have a loss of consciousness. So that obvious sign is not there in 9 out of 10 cases. What we have surrounding that, though, is a higher percentage, but still not universal, change in the brain's capacity to process information and commit that to memory, both for information just prior to the injury that is not yet consolidated in long-term memory, and also new information as it's being processed. And so that is an indicator. Really what we ultimately focus on, though, are the various signs and symptoms that move beyond, and I'll talk about those in a minute, as well as various neurocognitive difficulties, balance difficulties along the way. What we also know, though, about this injury, or are learning more about, is that there's some modifier variables, things that may result in this injury playing out differently from one child to another or from one adult to another. We still have a whole lot to learn about this, but we know that kids that have a history of a relatively recent injury, so an injury, concussion injury history, kids with learning disabilities and attention deficit, kids with mood disorders, anxiety disorders, kids with histories of prior migraine headaches, all seem to modify and prolong recovery. So things that we know are already neurologically involved, then with an injury to that neurologically different brain, producing, it seems, in some at least with those histories, different outcomes. One of the things that we really focus on here then is, and I'm going to talk about this in a minute, is what do we look for? What are we trying to recognize on the non-medical side? What are we trying to diagnose on the medical side? So the injury characteristics are very important for the clinician to identify and then to do a very full assessment of symptoms that may manifest, and ultimately knowing again what are those modifier variables that may tell us whether you are a later recoverer. One of the things here, again, we talked about, Julie mentioned this, is that this is really an issue, we think, more of the software of the brain. In other words, the neurometabolic, neurochemical, neurotransmission problems, rather than in a hardware or tearing of the tissue, at least as our current methodologies tell us. And this is a slide from our colleagues at UCLA that shows some of the changes in both the influx of things like calcium into the neural cell, potassium out of that cell, changes in neurotransmitter concentration, ways that cerebral blood flow changes. I won't go into a lot of detail except to say this is the neurochemical set of factors that we think may be changing, and the x-axis there is time. So the amount of time that it may take for those systems to recover. Some newer methods now looking at functional imaging. This actually happens to be MR spectroscopy, where we can start to look at neurochemical changes in the brain, may ultimately help us. There are other methods looking at electrophysiologic, others that look at more detailed neurotransmission factors in the brain. But again, things that go beyond the standard CT MRI. I think this is an important slide. This is from our colleagues at Pittsburgh that looked at a group of high school kids. And the bottom line is that this injury involves recovery across time. Each one of those little dots there is an individual who was determined to be recovered from the injury. So the y-axis is the total percentage of those 134 high school athletes who had met criteria for full recovery. The x-axis is the number of days. And what you can see is that some recovered within a matter of a few days, others took well past a month. This is why we strongly discourage anyone using a simple formula of, oh, take 7 to 10 days off, you'll be okay. This is an individualized injury. What we're looking for, again, are sets of symptoms. These are the four categories of symptoms that we look for: physical, cognitive, emotional, and sleep. What we know, of course, is that these kinds of symptoms co-occur, or they occur in other conditions as well. So you have to have a clinician who knows how to ask the questions about injury characteristics and also then tying that together with the likely temporal existence of these signs and symptoms. It also tells us that from the point of view of both public health and medical recognition, we have some work to do, and this is some of the things that we've been doing. This is the work from the CDC looking at the clipboard sticker, helping on the non-medical side, helping coaches to recognize the signs and symptoms on the sideline so that if in doubt, they sit out a youngster that takes a blow and demonstrates any of these. We've also been doing some work where we have taken that material and we have put it into a smartphone application just to make one more way, one more vehicle for that information to be out there. The physician's toolkit called Heads Up Brain Injury in Your Practice was really focused on increasing the early identification and diagnosis. And this is some of the work that we have done that went into the physician's toolkit, developing a tool called the ACE, which again is looking at definition of injury characteristics, the signs and symptoms profile, the risk factors, in better identifying these injuries. The SCAT2 is one that's been used in the sport world and is a part of our Zurich work. One of the things we know, though, is that if we don't identify these injuries early, the risks go up. And what we can see is that repeated injury is really the issue, making sure that these symptoms are identified right away, because it takes longer to recover from a second injury. That brain is much more vulnerable to re-injury, and those second and third injuries can create some catastrophic outcomes. On the high incidence side, it results in a much longer period of recovery. On a low incidence side, it can result in death or permanent brain damage. Keys to recovery here. So what is the evidence? Well, right now our evidence is a four-letter word, and we call it rest. That's not what kids like to hear, but we think that not taking any more forces to that brain that is vulnerable and allowing that physiologic software system to normalize, to return back to normal activity is very, very important. That means not overexerting the brain. We think about that more logically with physical activity. But one of the things that we're talking about now, really trying to get out, this is a paper that we just published in Physical Medicine Rehabilitation Clinics of North America, is what we do in the schools. Because using that brain for learning, it is the organ of learning, as we say in the paper, results in physiologic demand on a brain that may not be ready to do that. Another paper we put out on cognitive rest and how we manage that thinking activity, a huge issue that, again, the CDC has taken a stand on, and we've got a toolkit and some further materials that will be coming out ultimately to help schools understand this injury. So the treatment is ultimately removal from further risk, allowing the brain's physiology to return to normal, which, as we can see in that one slide, could be a matter of days, weeks, or months, and managing that across that child's life, a big part of which is school. So let's look to the future here. Where should we be, quote unquote, heading, right? If your brain is your future, we want to prevent injury. We want to do that on a primary prevention, from a primary prevention perspective, that is stopping it from occurring. But we also, from a secondary prevention perspective, want to recognize and manage this problem carefully and protect the youngster from further injury. We need to clearly improve our concussion care and services. We are still, in the medical world, really looking to increase our skill and knowledge, increase that capacity for both medical practitioners, schools, and athletic and other agencies to deliver support services for kids with these injuries. And ultimately, to better understand what underlies this injury. Research to understand the genetic predisposition, the underlying software neurometabolic problems, and ultimately what modifies recovery. And finally, specific treatments that can work for specific types of outcomes. So with that, I'm going to stop. We know that we have a lot of work to do here, but we've made some progress over the last 10 years and look forward to the public health community really joining that effort. Thank you.